Ms. Jackson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. The case we are arguing today is that of Mr. Mutondo, who is an asylum applicant from the Congo. The agency decision in this case is a clear example of the type of speculation and conjecture that this Court has warned against over and over again. The immigration judge clearly misconstrued and misquoted the petitioner's testimony and also misapplied the law to his case. The immigration judge and the government relied heavily...
I don't understand this business about speculation and the like. How did he make his travel arrangements? How did he have the priests make his travel arrangements before he met them?
Well, that's our argument, Your Honor. He never said that. He consistently and repeatedly testified that he did not know exactly how the arrangements were made. He did not know where the passport was obtained or how. And he should not be expected to know how an identity theft ring would work that would provide this type of document. To say that the arrangements were possibly made before he even met the priest who helped him may be true. However, when you're working with people who provide fake documents, fake travel documents, and other such things...
The alternative explanation is that it's a fake explanation.
Well,
so somebody has to decide. And
that's
normally
true, Your
we
Honor,
think that that's the role of the trier of fact.
That's true, Your Honor. And the...
Especially since your client concedes that he's willing to commit perjury in order to come to the United States. That's what this whole business about obtaining fake travel documents is. Right? You have a client who is a confessed liar, and the immigration judge concludes that he's continuing to lie. Now, why should we say that's clearly erroneous?
Well, I disagree that he's a confessed liar, Your Honor.
Documents are fraudulent.
Time,
he knew that.
But from the time that he entered the United States, he immediately sought asylum.
He's a confessed liar, and he then says, but on date X, I stopped lying.
He immediately sought asylum upon entry, Your Honor. There has been several cases where... it's common in asylum cases for clients to obtain fake travel documents or altered travel documents in order to flee the country that is persecuting them. And in this case, this is one of those cases. The travel arrangements and
the alternative understanding is that he came from Scotland,
well,
where he was not being persecuted.
Your Honor, the people who provide these types of documents for victims of persecution and for other people who just want fake documents, if they did not have these documents prepared on the day that they are requested, they would be out of business. They have to have things in place before they're asked for them. Otherwise, no one would go to them for these things.
The argument is that this group of mystery priests who can't be identified are running a large-scale forgery ring.
No, the priests just contacted whoever provided the documents, and that is unclear in the record. The other thing to remember in this case is that what makes the respondent's story more believable than the judge's speculation is that he provided a plethora of other documents to support his claim that the judge did not even address, including affidavits from other party members, party leaders, including an expert witness report and other identification documents related to his UDPS party membership, which is the basis of his claim. The immigration judge did not mention it at all.
Those were all presented to the IJ, I presume.
Yes. The only time the judge mentioned those was when he was listing the exhibits of things that had been submitted. And he did not even specify which documents were in the exhibit. He just said an exhibit with tabs A through L, or I can't remember the exact letters. But so it's clear that the judge did not even review any of those documents. He doesn't mention them. He doesn't say why they should not be believed, why those things would not be credible to support the claim.
Well, he gives two different stories.
I disagree.
You don't think the second one, where he just basically stepped into the shoes of someone else, versus this other circuitous route that he took,
I think from the testimony, if you look at it, Mr. Matondo was just speculating at that second hearing as to what could have happened. But he consistently at both hearings said, I don't know. I don't know if this person existed. I don't know how these documents were made. I don't know how these travel arrangements were made. You know, although he speculated as to what may have happened, he remained consistent that he didn't procure those documents himself and that he didn't know how they were obtained.
That at least is consistent. He didn't have anything to do with any of it, whichever story.
I don't think he told two different stories, Your Honor. I think that either way, the first hearing, he just said, I don't know. I don't know how they were made. I don't know how that happened. So the immigration judge told him to go back to detention and think about it until the next hearing, at which time he said, this is what the guy in Glasgow told me, but I still don't know. He remained consistent. He doesn't know. The government and the immigration judge also relied heavily on the passage of the Real ID Act, so I'd like to address that. Real ID was not intended to be an unlimited license to reject asylum claims based on conclusions such as the immigration judge's here. It was intended to prevent terrorists from obtaining asylum. There's no evidence in this record that Mr. Matondo had any sort of terrorist connections. The alleged inconsistencies, which I would say there aren't.
Nothing, if you look at the language in the statute about credibility, it's not limited to terrorists in any way.
If you look at
why would one interpret it that way?
Looking at some of the legislative history, Your Honor.
Look, the Supreme Court has been as clear as one can imagine that one starts with the language of the statute, and if there's some ambiguity, you might turn to the legislative history to disambiguate. So what is the ambiguity in the statute that we need to go to the legislative history to disambiguate?
Well, if you look at the language of the statute itself, Your Honor, it simply codifies what has been the holding of this court and many courts.
Certainly not. The whole point of this statute was that Congress was dissatisfied with the way courts of appeals were handling credibility claims. To say that we were being codified is
well, the only
facetious.
Difference. The only difference, if I can continue, is that the credibility finding does not have to be based on inconsistencies that go to the heart of the asylum claim. However, those inconsistencies would still
ambiguity?
Need to be
what
present.
Is the, look, what is the ambiguity in the statute that requires a turn to the legislative history to disambiguate? It certainly isn't any ambiguity about whether it's limited to terrorists.
That was just the intention that I found by looking at the legislative history, Your Honor. At any rate, the standard of credibility still needs to focus on whether inconsistencies are even present, and if so, whether they're material and knowing and willful. And in this case, they were not. I would contend that there were not any inconsistencies. However, if you agree with the immigration judge, those inconsistencies that he alleges still were not material, not knowing and willful. The respondent simply didn't know where the travel documents and arrangements came from. This was a case where I believe the expectations of the immigration judge and the BIA were completely unrealistic, and the evidence presented, which was not addressed by the immigration judge, was credible, consistent with country conditions, internally consistent, and demonstrated a well-founded fear of future persecution and also past persecution. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Ms. Brenner-Leone.
May it please the Court, Wendy Brenner-Leone on behalf of the Attorney General. The Court should deny the petition in this case because the evidence does not compel reversal of the adverse credibility determination. Contrary to opposing counsel's argument, this case was not based on speculation or conjecture. It was based on hard facts, primarily the fact that, on one hand, the petitioner testified that he was imprisoned from May 17th to May 31st when he escaped, and then he met these priests who helped him to get out of Congo or out of Zambia, and they made travel arrangements for him. This was the first time he ever met these priests. They made travel arrangements, and yet what was in stark contrast to that was the record had it had hotel reservations, which were made on May 17th, which was when he was supposedly incarcerated, and also they would have been made before he ever even met these priests. We don't even need to rely on the Real ID Act in this case, because that inconsistency goes to the very heart of this matter, whether this petitioner, in fact, was ever incarcerated as he claimed. Additionally, this case is not, as counsel would lead you to believe, a finding of adverse credibility, because the petitioner did not know how the travel arrangements were conducted. It was based on those inconsistencies between the actual travel documents and the petitioner's testimony, and then there was additional inconsistencies when the petitioner was asked, well, how could these travel arrangements be made before you even spoke to the priests who made them? And he first claimed he didn't know how it was done. Then later, after this immigration judge continued the merits proceeding four times. When he came back, then he had a new story. He did know how it was done. This time he said that there was a person who just happened to have the same last name as him who made these arrangements to go to Chicago, and he changed his mind, decided not to come. And as a result, somehow they were able to hook up the petitioner with these travel documents, and this man's reservations to Chicago were given to the petitioner, including his passport, and that was photo substituted, which that also was contradicted by record evidence that showed, in fact, there never was a photo substitution. But the primary story here was, I know nothing about how this was done, and later, this is how it was done. So these were all details that do go to the heart of the claim. It certainly justified the immigration judge's decision. They're specific, they're cogent reasons, and they're rationally related to the adverse credibility finding. With respect to the argument that there's documents in the record to support the petitioner's claim, I would point out to the court that there's not one piece of evidence in the record where anyone says this man was ever imprisoned. Though he claims that he was, the affidavits in this case, the first one is from a professor who talks about country conditions. He only read the statement by the petitioner and based on that said, well, that's consistent with what people say will happen to them. But he never met the petitioner. He had no personal knowledge. He never even spoke to him to see if maybe this was made up. Then he also, petitioner also obtained an affidavit from the head of the UDPS in the United States. Again, there's no evidence of ever meeting this person. The affidavit there never said this man was incarcerated. Supposedly, they contacted somebody in the Congo who confirmed he was a member of the UDPS. No mention of ever being in prison, tortured, and any of that. And then finally, he got an affidavit or an attestation from the president of his cell in the Congo. He was able to get that within 2 months of his arrival here, and that said that essentially he was a member of UTPS. Again, no mention of ever being tortured, incarcerated, imprisoned. Though there are country reports talking about conditions in the Congo, there's absolutely nothing to suggest this man himself was ever imprisoned, detained, as he claimed, and the travel documents certainly would refute his story. In conclusion, unless this court would have any other questions, it should sustain the immigration judge's decision, as it certainly is supported by specific cogent reasons, and I would ask that the petition be denied. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Jackson?
Just a few points, Your Honors. I'd like to reiterate that a careful reading of this testimony will show that the petitioner remained consistent in saying that he did not know how these arrangements were made. The immigration judge's conclusions then were a complete misconstruction and misapplication of his testimony. Again, as to the travel arrangements possibly having been made before he even met the people who assisted them with making them, that's their business. That is the business of people who provide false documents and allow for this kind of thing to happen, that they need those kinds of things ready in advance. Finally, if there are no further questions, just like to say that the evidence here, I think, was crucial and was not even addressed by the immigration judge. And I think that on itself is a basis for a remand. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.